I know there is one source in this universe. This source is spirit, universal mind, the one, Mother Earth, God. It is all those. All those names are for and mean the same thing, this powerful, powerful source. And this source is always present. It is always available. And it is in everyone and everything, both seen and unseen. It is always present. This source is love. It is prosperity. It is harmony. It is peace. And because this source is in everyone and everything, it must therefore be in each of us. Each and every one of us is source, is God, is divine in human form. Take that in. We are the divine in human form. The person next to you is the divine in human form. That person on the street corner is the divine in human form. We are all the divine in human form. And we are love. We are prosperity. We are peace. We are harmony. It is not that we simply possess these qualities. We are these qualities. And these qualities, the qualities of the divine, are always in us, as us. Within us, our essence, our spirit, our natural state of being is love, kindness, compassion, peace, prosperity. And when we live our lives from that sacred space within, it is a truly magical and amazing gift that we give to ourselves and to everyone around us. We show up as that wonderful spiritual gift to the world, the gift of our divinity. And at this time of giving, that can be the greatest gift of all, knowing that we are, each of us, showing up as God and living our lives from that divine heart space. I am so grateful in the knowing that we all have those same divine God qualities, that we are all one, and I see it in each and every one of us. I see it in how we show up for this community. I see it in the larger community that I live in, and I'm filled up with love and gratitude for each of us. So I release these words into the law, knowing that they are the absolute truth of us in this sanctuary this morning, of the children and the adults in our children and teens program, in all that I touch and all that I see. I release the knowing of the divinity, knowing the presence of those amazing God qualities within all beings on this planet. And I know it is so. I know it. And so please, together, let us say, and so it is. Thank you.
So this month we're exploring themes of light. And I love the fact that this is a month that so many cultures have festivals of light. And it's the darkest time of the year, right? But there's something in us that knows that even in the darkness, there is a light. There's always that light. And we keep alive that hope and that memory and that knowingness of a light. And so this month we're looking at the various and sundry themes of light. And we're going to look at three of the Sundays, we're going to look at stories of light, none of which are true, but all of which are true. The ancient Roman statesman Sallustius said, regarding a myth that was going around about, some myths and stories were going around about one of the Roman gods. He said, this never happened, but it always is. This never happened, but it always is. And so we're looking at these stories as soul stories, as explorations of not factual reality, but what does it mean to our soul? What does it mean to our soul? What can we learn from this? And soul stories are important. Last week, I quoted Richard Rohr, who said, our usual viewing platform is inadequate to see what is real. And our usual viewing platform, especially for us today, is kind of that rational, scientifically based, fact-based, you know, mind, right? The intellect, yes? Okay. And I got to know if it's true. We got fake news. We got all this stuff. I want to know, just, is it true? I love Mark Twain said, you at least need to know your facts, and then you can distort them all you want. I love Mark Twain. So today we're going to look at our deepest longings that are heart and soul based. And so the story we're going to look at today is the story of Hanukkah. Tomorrow evening is the beginning of the Jewish festival of Hanukkah, the 8-day celebration. And so we're going to take a look at this story, which is about as true as the love story in the movie Titanic. Titanic was true, right? I mean, that happened. And the Maccabean Revolution that this is based upon happened, but the rest of it isn't true. It's a good story. Okay. But every element of this story is a soul story. It's an element of us. It's an element of you and me. It's an element of our psyche, our beingness for us to take a look at. So the story goes, a little background. So about 333 BC, Alexander the Great conquered, was running around conquering most of the world anywhere near Greece, right? And so Judea, Israel, was part of one of the countries that he conquered. So by about a century and a half later, Alexander had died, and long before. And the Greek Empire was sort of broken up into a couple of different groups. And so the ones that ruled Judea were called the Seleucids, the Seleucid Empire. And the king there was Antiochus in Judea. And so the Greeks, usually when they took over a culture, left the culture more or less intact. They didn't try to wreck it. They just wanted, a little tax and we own you sort of thing, right? But you could go about your local shrines and your local lifestyle and all that sort of stuff. That's not a bad thing, right? Excepting that if you misbehaved as a culture, as a society, then they took your religious shrines away. They did this in a couple of places. And so in 168 BC, as punishment for local unrest, they took away the temple, the access to the temple, and basically forbade the Jews to practice Judaism. Okay? So that's the kind of the background. And so they'd taken away the temple, they put up in the temple instead a statue of Zeus, the god Zeus, and offered sacrifices to Zeus, which included pigs. Now, if you're a good Jewish high priest, this is an absolute travesty. They called it the Abomination of Desolation. Isn't that a great title? The Abomination of Desolation. And so that was the status of the time. So about 168, a family named the Maccabees, various and sundry generations and brothers and cousins and all like that, led a revolution, a revolt against the Seleucid Empire. And after 4 years in 164, they won. They kind of regained control, and they reclaimed the temple. And so they went in and cleansed the temple. And the temple in Jewish culture was the center. It was the center of Jewish culture. It was the most important thing to them. Before the Starbucks, before the Macy's, it was the most important thing to them. So they cleansed it. They got rid of all the stuff. They took down the statue. They re-erected what needed to be there. Re-put up the sacred objects. And they went to relight the sacred flame of the menorah. And the menorah was a seven-branch candle that was decreed by God in one of the earlier parts of the Bible that they were supposed to have. And they went to relight it. But there was only enough sacred oil for one day. And it would take seven more days to purify the oil to be ready to actually fill it up. But rather than waiting, they chose to light the flame anyways. And this one day's worth of oil lasted for 8 days, which is considered the miracle of Hanukkah, and thus proving God's love for his people. I don't know why God has to prove his love, but it's a good thing. Once in a while, we like to get proved that God loves us, right? Like a little tangible, yeah. So that's the story. Is it factual? No. Is it a soul story? Yes. So let's break this down. Let's take a look at it and how it relates to us. First of all, the miracle takes place in Jerusalem, which is the core city, the home city, the center, if you will, of all of Judea, of all the Jewish faith. And Jerusalem, the name itself, literally translates to the foundation or the place of peace. Salem means peace. Jeru is the foundation, the cornerstone. So it's the cornerstone of peace. If we remember that, we have a cornerstone of peace always within us. It's our home. It's our center of who we are. It's always there. No matter what's going on the outside, because it wasn't really very peaceful in the outside world right then. But there's always that place of peace within us. And that place is the place from which miracles can happen. See, I can't be in miracle consciousness if I'm all scattered and if I'm all in conflict. I must be at peace in order to allow my connection with that spirit to be known. I'm always connected, but sometimes I forget. Usually when I'm in conflict, I forget. And so I have to step back from that to that true nature and allowing that miracle. And a miracle is simply allowing spirit to flow, the nature of spirit to flow. That's all that it is. Am I in a place that allows the nature of spirit to flow? Am I in a foundation of peace? But of course, the area was anything but peaceful at the time with this battle going on, this civil war and all that stuff. A rabbi friend years ago gave a talk that I heard he called it the dirty little secret of Hanukkah. The dirty little secret of Hanukkah. I loved that. And he said, the dirty little secret of Hanukkah was we invited them in. We invited the Silicides in. See, at the time, there were what were known as Hellenized Jews, which were Jews who had kind of adopted the Greek lifestyle. Today, we might look at another culture that America has had an influence in, and we might say an Americanized culture, right? There are a couple of those out there. So these were Hellenized Jews, and they were happily following a more liberal lifestyle, not following the kosher laws quite so tightly and all, you know, a number of different things. They were having a better time, right? And then there are the Orthodox Jews, the keepers of the old ways. And we must do everything the way that we used to. We have to keep the kosher laws and all the old ways. And so there are these two kind of factions. I'm so glad, you know, like today, I don't know if you can imagine this today. But let's say it would be like having a bunch of liberals and a bunch of conservatives who are polarized and really upset with each other, constantly contesting for who's going to be the high priest of the temple. Now, I don't know if you can even imagine that kind of a thing. Because we don't do that sort of stuff today. We're more enlightened than that. But way back then, we had the alt-left and we had the alt-right back then, you know? The more things change, yes. And so there was, these two factions were very polarized. And the Hellenized Jews asked the king to step in on their behalf, the Greek king. And so he did. And he took away the temple privileges, which was a total slap in the face to all Jews, but especially the Orthodox Jews. And so we get to ask ourselves in this scenario, in this part of the story, how often do I bring conflicts upon myself by doing something to relieve a conflict that's already happening, by making agreements that are just to kind of ease the pain for the moment, but not really to solve the problem, only to make things worse later? Okay, I don't know if any of you have ever done that, but you probably know somebody, and I have done that. By the way, the Orthodox Jews, after they kicked the Greeks out, a few years later went to a different group of people called the Romans and said, would you come in on our side? And they said, yes. And we all know how that worked out. So both sides turn to human resources, if you will, not to God, not to spirit. It's a reminder, our lesson from this first part of it, is that while we honor human resources, we need to learn to turn to and listen to spirit first. That's where we go first. When we can't figure it out with our intellect, don't sit there and try and continue with the intellect to solve it. Sit there and step back and say, this is spirit. Spirit, this is yours. I don't know what to do. I don't know is a really powerful thing. I don't know is a really powerful place to be because it opens us up to something different. Rather than I'm going to go out and get something else to come over here and help me. And better yet, we don't put ourselves in the position in the first place where we need to, because there's all this conflict going on. So that's the first part I want to take a look at. The next one is we encounter the defiled temple. And the temple represents our inner sanctum, our soul, our sacred, the most sacred part of us. And the inner sanctum of the Jewish temple represents the core of where we really are truly in connection with the divine. But just like the Greeks had done in the Jewish temple, and just like it happened in the Jewish temple, because they forgot their source, somebody else took it over, right? And so they erected false gods. We erect false gods in our own lives, in our own temples. We erect false gods of money. And when I say false gods of money, a lot of people think, oh yeah, that 1% that worships money over there and like that. I'm also talking about the ones who say, I'm sorry, I can't afford that. I don't have enough. Because that's basically saying, I know that I'm in an infinite universe that is an abundant flow of life, and I'm going to not tune into that. Breathe. So we make money our determinant whether we do what our heart is calling us to do or not. Now, none of you have ever done that, but you know somebody. Okay? So money becomes in charge of my life. Work becomes in charge of my life. It's another false god. Relationships are great until they are addictive, right? Sex. Substances. Food, drink, chocolate, drugs, shopping, especially at this time of year. It's so much fun to not face the emptiness we're feeling. Let's go shopping instead for some people. And all sorts of different diversions and creature comforts and indulgences that we do instead of what we know to do. See, right now, some of you remember from last Sunday, my back is a little bit out. Today it's a little bit less out than it was last Sunday, but it's still kind of hurting. And I've known for 10 years that I should be doing back exercises, but hey, that takes work. That's a practice. I just get up in the morning, I go, I want my breakfast, you know, or whatever. So we divert ourselves. We don't do what we know is ours to do. And so we have to cleanse our temple where we find we have false gods set up. And trust me, we all do. We all do. There's no shame in it, just notice. We have to cleanse our temple, and we have to fight our way free. And if you notice in the story, fighting our way free wasn't an overnight process. It wasn't a weekend retreat process. It took 4 years for them to fight their way free. So lesson number two is, what's the status of your temple? Is spirit first in your life? There's a lovely Ricky Byers song that says, God is first in my life, second to none. And so is that where I put my life? Next, we'll take a look at the lighting of the menorah. And the Hanukkah menorah is a 9-branch because Jews are not supposed to, you're not supposed to have a 7-branch menorah, which was in the temple, anywhere outside the temple. It's only the one in the temple that is supposed to be the 7-branch menorah. And so this is actually called a Hanukkah. I hope I pronounced that right. The 7 branches, notice the 7 is a number of completion throughout the Jewish culture. So it's the completion of God. You know, Troward talks about, and Emmett Fox both talk about the 7 main aspects of God. And it says number 7 is a powerful number. And so it represents that these different aspects of the divine. As we look at lighting the menorah, when they start to light the menorah, there's an appearance of not enough, right? There's not enough sacred oil to last me for 8 days. There's not enough. Sometimes we feel like we're not enough to rekindle our own light, to reconnect with our own light, our own love. And that's how we perceive oftentimes with our usual viewing platform, to use Richard Rohr's phrase. But they move forward anyways, right? They lit it anyways. They said, I'm not going to wait. We're not going to wait. You know, it's been 4 years. This place is desecrated. We're starting now. Just with what we have right now, we're moving forward. It reminds me, there's a famous quote by the Scottish mountain climber W.H. Murray, who said, "Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is only one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans." And that truth is that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence, spirit, moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events, this is the flow of spirit, a whole stream of events issues from a decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance, which no man could have dreamt would have come his way. I learned a deep respect for one of Goethe's couplets, "Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it." He wrote that after he'd been invited by Sir Edmund Hillary to join one of the Everest climbing expeditions. And his first response was, "I don't have enough money." That was his first response, because it was kind of expensive in those days. Still is. But he decided to book passage on a ship to India, which was their jumping off point. He took a step. He said, I don't know how the rest of it's coming about, but I'm going to make a reservation on this boat to be on that passage to India. And that's when he found that everything else started to move forward, started to come into his influence. So lesson three is, do we commit in faith? Do we take a step, or do we look at outer circumstances and say, "Oh, my ducks are not in a row, it's not the right time. Look at the economy, man, my relationship, my health, my whatever, Mercury's in retrograde," my favorite one, you know. Do we say, blankety-blank all that, fill in your blankety-blank, "We're going. I'm going forward. I'm going to do this thing anyways." Do we commit in faith? And then finally, I want to look at the oil and the candle. We are the candle. You and I are the light. You and I are the light of spirit. It's not out there somewhere. It's not somebody else. You. Nudge the person next to you if you're nearby somebody, or look at somebody nearby and say, "You are the light of God. You are the light of God right now." Not when you fill in the blank, right now. Right now. Breathe that in. Yeah. Yes. This light is fueled by the sacred oil within. And it takes time and it takes committed spiritual practice to create a reliable supply of spiritual sustenance. It takes application. See, the reason it took 7 days to prepare this oil wasn't for the preparation of the oil. It was for the preparation of the person preparing the oil, so that they were in a consciousness, that when they touched the oil, they brought that high consciousness with them. It says in the Bible that the oil has light whipped into it. There was a lovely quote that I used a few weeks ago, that if we're at war, when we touch war, we create more war. But if we're at peace, when we touch war, we create peace. And so it was for the person to be in that spirit. See, the Maccabees couldn't do this. They had just gotten through killing a whole lot of people, fighting and warring, and some of them had died. They were not in the consciousness of doing that. And so they had to get a high priest, one of the priests, who could be in a more purified place to then spend the 7 days preparing himself, themselves, to be that place that on the eighth day could touch the oil and prepare the oil. Pure olive oil. Beaten for the light. It reminds me of a phrase out of the Quran, one of my favorite passages out of the Quran, that says, "Allah is the light of the heavens and the earth. The example of his light is like a niche within which is a lamp. And the lamp is within glass. And the glass, as it were, a pearly white star, lit from the oil of a blessed olive tree, neither of the east nor of the west, whose oil would almost glow if untouched by fire. Light upon light. That is our oil. That is our sacred beingness. We are that. We have that within us. But we cannot beat the light into the oil unless we ourselves are centered in the light. Unless we recognize that we ourselves are the light. The first day that my back went out, I was laying in bed doing some prayer work. Dear Jesus, help me. Not that quite that kind of prayer work, but. And I kept hearing this phrase, you are the light of the world, you are the light of the world, you are the light of the world. Actually, it's I am the light of the world, I am the light of the world. And I got that it wasn't that it's a light come down into the world. The world has light and dark, but there is a light that is beyond that. The very first thing that God creates in Genesis is light. Not light and light. We are that light. We are that light in the world itself. We radiate and vibrate when we're at peace, when we're in alignment with that light that is always present in the world itself. The world isn't separate from the light. The world is the light in form. You and I are the light in form. And so it's that soul connection of, I am the light of the world by choice. I choose no longer to be the darkness of the world or the mixed metaphor of the world, the mixture of light and dark. I choose to be the light of the world. And it's a soul choice. When we return, when we are in that place of sacredness, we return to that foundation of peace, that new Jerusalem that we already are. And so that's what I invite you to take with you from this Hanukkah season. And so the practice I invite you to do this week is to take one of those four lessons I just talked about and contemplate it, one that resonates with you, maybe one that kind of feels a little bit of a challenge for you. The first one was, am I centered in a foundation of peace? Or have I invited in conflict? Am I centered in a foundation of peace, or have I invited in conflict? Mark Twain said, I'm an old man, and I've experienced many troubles, most of which never happened. I found myself in arguments and conflicts with so many people while I'm by myself. All those ex-wives, all those people who annoyed me. Standing in the shower, we had great arguments, and they weren't there. So, am I a foundation of peace, or am I inviting in conflict? The second one is, what's the status of my temple? Do I really truly put spirit first? Or do I have some false gods desecrating the place? Take a breath. The third one, do I commit and step forward in faith, or am I giving power to my outer circumstances? Do I step forward knowing that I am spirit in form, operating in a universe that is spirit in form, and step forward from that, or do I wait? Well, no. I got to wait till everything's right. And finally, do I take time daily to be spiritually pure? Whatever that means for you. Keeping my oil pure and my candle lit. Do I take the time to go to spirit, to spend time communing in spirit every day? So I invite you to contemplate one of those this week, this month too, for that matter. Am I centered in a foundation of peace? What's the status of my temple? Do I commit and step forward in faith? And do I take time to be spiritually pure? Are you willing to play with one of those this week? Okay, me too. I'm going to close with a quote from Ernest. And he starts with a quote. He says, you are the light of the world. The quote is, you are the light of the world. And he goes, man, human beings, man is the candle of the Lord. How important then that this light be kept trimmed and burning with the oil of pure spirit through the wick of peace and joy. In this way, do we glorify that indwelling God who is the Heavenly Father and the Cosmic Mother of all. I invite you this week to glorify that Heavenly Father, that Infinite Father, and that Cosmic Infinite Mother, and be the light of the world. Let's pray. And so recognizing that infinite presence is all there is. Acknowledging what is sometimes identified as the seven main aspects of God, of life, life energy itself, life itself, and love, an infinite love that is beyond understanding, that is not conditional, love. And light, the light of wisdom, the light that can see all possibilities, all potential. And power, the ability to move that potential into form and experience and expression. And peace, when we recognize that there is nothing in opposition to this movement. Nothing in opposition to God. Nothing in opposition to us. And beauty, which is what is created out of this spirit. And the joy of spirit experiencing its own beauty, its own creation. These are the seven main aspects of God. Life, love, light, power, peace, beauty, and joy. And because that presence is infinite, because it is all that there is, we are one of it. We don't have it, as Marlisa said. We are it. It's already our foundation. It is who we are. And so I speak my word that this week we wake up even more fully. We purify our temples. We allow our light to shine. We allow our oil to be sanctified. We allow ourselves to be released from past conflicts and places of disturbance. We are free of abominations, of desolations in our lives, and step into a light that is so beautiful and so powerful, and recognizing that the light is us. We are it. And we let it shine boldly. We go forth and let it shine. We follow the call of Spirit within us, and we say yes. And gratitude for this light, and gratitude for this love, and gratitude for this Spirit that is each of us, this light upon light that we are. I release this word into what we call the law, that process that knows how to move this beautiful idea into actual form and experience for us in our lives right here, right now. It does so. We say yes, and so it is.
Today, we learned about forgiveness and that forgiveness can be a hard thing. To forgive a person or thing that caused something that you didn't want to have happen or something didn't go right. But it's important to forgive the situation and forgive yourself and let everything go and make sure there's always room for love.
In the kids' room, we learned about forgiving others, and we also read a Christmas book where Jack broke an ornament from his mom's past, and then he fixed everything by being kind and making something new.